Okay, we're about to begin a new sugya. We are still going to be using the term shishim, but it is a different type of sugya, a little bit of a different angle of the sugya, some of the things we've been talking about. And it starts with the first of the Ramakomos in Chulun Daf Tzadi Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara quotes a statement, Beitza b'shishim v'ein beitza min aminyan. If you want to invoke the principle of bidl on a tray for egg, now that statement in of itself, what in the world is tray about an egg? So an egg could be non-kosher for a variety of reasons. It could either be an egg that came from a non-kosher bird, or derives from psukim, that kol ha-yotzim and atomei tomei. Anything that comes out of a non-kosher animal, out of a non-kosher bird, is treif. That's the reason why milk that comes out of a chazer is treif, or an egg that comes out of an ostrich is treif. So that's one way of a beitza being problematic. You can have another problematic kind of an egg, if it has an afroch in it, if it has a little chick inside it, so then the chick itself is treif, but it's an avail because it wasn't shechted properly. That's the whole issue the Gemara has about blood and eggs. Blood and eggs may be an indication of the fact that there may be a chick that's developing. Then you have other kinds of potential problems with eggs, beitza shenol de biyomtiv, so we'll talk about that hopefully as we go on also. So we're not quite sure what kind of egg we're talking about here. We're talking about an egg that you can't eat. So comes the Gemara and says that when you have this non-kosher egg, presumably for whatever reason, and you want to be mevatel it, so then the sheer bittel is not surprising. Shishim. So you need 60 times corresponding to the tray for egg, but the in beitza ben aminyan, that the egg itself doesn't count towards the number shishim. So you need, in really a sense, a total of 61. So the Gemara now questions this statement of beitza b'shishim. Amar Avidi Baravin Abaye, the Meimah Diyava Taima. Are you telling me that eggs give off taste, or the taste that comes out of the eggs is significant in halacha? So what did the Gemara think we meant with the statement of beitza b'shishim? Clearly, the Gemara thought that we're talking about as follows. We're not talking about a bag full of eggs, and we have one possible treif in there. We're talking about eggs that were all made into a scrambled eggs together, eggs that were cooked together, that were prepared together. And now it turns out that one of those eggs was treif, and now there's a question of nosin tam. Because that's the usual issue. That's the issue of shishish. It was always an issue of nosin tam. So either we're dealing with minam, those are intricate details, but the Gemara clearly is addressing the issue of beitza b'shishim as addressing to a potential issue of tam coming out of the beitza, to which the Gemara drops a question. Wait a second. Hold the phone. Stop. Where's the tam? Who tam? What tam? Beitza doesn't give off tam altogether, or whatever minimal amount of taste that comes out of just a mere egg is not enough to cause a problem in halacha. How do we know that that's true? So here it's a very, very strange question of the Gemara. If I would make such a statement that, what do you mean, the halacha is that an egg does give off taste, I would have quoted a Mishnah, I would have quoted a Bryce, I would have quoted a statement in an earlier Moir, I would have quoted some very authoritative statement to prove to me this fact that you're saying that eggs don't give off taste. The Gemara doesn't quote any of the above. The Gemara says, "Va'amri inshe." The Olam says, people say, "Ki maya de baby alma," that they say that a taste of an egg, that's like the water of the egg. There's nothing to it. That's not considered to be significant. An egg doesn't have enough of its own taste to really pose a problem. So the Gemara says, you're right, Gevalt. So therefore, what could beitza b'shisha mean? The Gemara works and tries and try to revamp. What are we talking about? We're talking about an egg that has a chick inside it. So you're right that the egg itself doesn't really have significant time, but the meat of the chick does, and that's the problem. So I'd kind of figure out, then the Gemara's going to go just technically to try to prove is that the correct answer, it's not the correct answer. But we finish for our purposes the basic shachmatayr in the Gemara. So it is clear from the Gemara that this scenario that was described, beitza b'shishim, must be talking about some kind of a nesidas tam issue, and that's why the Gemara got into trouble. Hey, there is no nesidas tam, and hocham ha'eskinan, there's a chick, which, yes, there is nesidas tam. So comes some of the Rishon Rabbah with the following question. We take a look, skip ahead for a moment to the third of the Ramakamos. The Ramban in our sugya quotes from the Rav Af Beis Din. Now, the Rav Af Beis Din is sometimes called the Raivin, but he's not really the Raivin. It's the same Russian table. It's Rav Af Beis Din, but it's not the Raivin that we're familiar with. It happened to have been, it was the father-in-law of the Raivin that we're familiar with, but he was called as the Rav Af Beis Din. So, the Rav Af Beis Din Kosav, from the fact that the Gemara asks this question, I was so bothered with this problem that there's no time being given. And the Gemara had to bend over backwards and stick a little chicken into this egg in order to explain where the tam is. He asks the Rav Beis Din, there was a much smoother pshat in Beitz B'Shishim. There was a much simpler pshat as to why he requires Shishim. And why didn't the Gemara use that simple pshat? What would that simple pshat have been? Falo shani le hadi amrinan beitza b'shishim levitule beitza gufa kamrinan. Why did the Gemara think that we're even talking about a question of tam? Why didn't the Gemara think as follows? We have a big basket full of eggs. Nobody's cooking the eggs. Nobody's cracking the eggs. There are no omelets being made of the eggs. We simply have a big basket of eggs. And 60 of the eggs in this basket are kosher. And one egg that was, I guess an ostrich egg and a chicken egg would probably be able to tell the difference between them. But you have other birds that are a little closer in size. So I have 60 kosher eggs and one treif egg. And now they all look the same to me. And now I can't tell. Is it which one is a treif egg? I don't know. Al zenemar beitza b'shishim. Why couldn't the Gemara fathom that as being the correct answer? What would we have gained with such an approach? It's not an issue of tam. Tam is only a question when we're being mevatel the taste of the item. Here we're not being mevatel the taste of it. We're being mevatel the guf adover. It's a mushroom adover adover. If I have three salamis and all the wrappings were taken off, two of them were kosher, one of them is treif, and they all get mixed up together in a basket. So the din is one of them is batel and the other two chad betray batel. There's not a sin, it's tam. Nobody's cooking the salamis together. Tam is not spreading from one salami to another. That's called bitul gufa davar. Or we sometimes use the phrase bitul yavish biyavish. It's two dry foods that are not interacting in terms of the sin, it's tam. So that's a different sugya lagamre. So why didn't the Gemara feel that that was a valid approach to the statement of Beitza B'Shishim? That was the Rav Avazdin's question. Why don't we need Shishim for Bitul Gufa Dover? And that would alleviate any discussion about is there not tam coming out of an egg. So comes the Rav Avazdin and continues. Mashma, the reason why the Gemara didn't say that, we can infer from what the Gemara doesn't say. It's not enough just to learn what the Gemara does say. You have to be medayik what the Gemara doesn't say, could have easily said. The reason why the Gemara didn't go down that route, mashma, debates a gufa chashiva kiberia v'lo batla. So comes the Gemara and says that, there comes Rav Avazdin and says that gufa beitza would not be batel b'shishim, because a gufa beitza would in fact not be batel, because a gufa beitza is called a beria. What is a beria? Beria, what's what, where? So beria is a sugya that appears actually in two places. It appears vis-a-vis tarobis, and it appears in other areas of halacha as well. A beria means an entire unit, like a creature, like an item, like an entire entity, an entire intact unit. And the Gemara tells us a little bit later on in the seventh Berakh of Chulin, there's a general rule, a beria is not batel. When I have a piece of meat, I'm cooking a piece of treif of meat, and the piece of meat gets mixed into the whole pot, or even if I'm not cooking, I'm taking a gufa salami, and the salami gets mixed in to the two kosher salamis, that salami is not a beria. There's no halachic unit called a salami. There's no intact unit called a salami. Salami is just a big chunk of meat. But what if I have something that's a unit, and that unit gets mixed into other things? So then, a beria is not subject to the regular rules of bitl. No bitl b'shish, no bitl b'rov, on items that are beria. What are some examples of berias? So the Gemara explains a little bit later on, the seventh parak, that a gid hanosha is a beria. Let's say, for example, I have 100 gidin, 100 nerves that are all mixed together, sitting in a basket together, and 99 of them are kosher ones, and one of them is gid hanosha. I have no idea which is which. I have no way to tell which is which. So I would have thought it's batel b'rov. The same way that when you have the three salamis, two a kosher, one's treif, you can eat all three of them, the batel b'rov. I would have thought the same is true for the gid hanosha. So the Mishnah says no. The Mishnah says that there's no bitl on the gid hanosha. So he asks the Gemara, why not? The liftel b'rov. And says the Gemara, beria shayni. A beria is a separate entity. It's one intact entity. And therefore, it's not subject to the regular rules of bitl. What are some of the practical ramifications of burial or batel for us? Most of us do not run into shilas of gid hanoshes being mixed in. The most common example of a beria is a bug. The Gemara says in Maseches Machos that an entire unit of a bug is considered to be a beria. So what would the din be as follows? Let's say I have a lot of food, and I have a bug mixed into this food. I can't find it. I'm looking around. I'm sitting there, I know it's here, but I don't see it anymore. So do I have a right to say, it's batal, finish batal, bro, batal, shish, batal, whatever the numbers are, it's batal. Do I have to say, no, not so simple. This bug is an entity. It's an entire unit, and therefore beria is not subject to the regular rules of bittal. So the answer is, it says in Shulchan Aruch, that's the problem, that a bug is in fact not batal. It is because of that halacha, that a bug is not batal, that has caused a whole series of issues in terms of Bichus Kashrus, adayam azen, in terms of bugs. Whenever you have a shiloh, whether you have a bug problem in any given food, so you have a few questions you have to ask yourself. First, you have to ask yourself one of the facts. Are there really bugs in this item? Let's say I have a banana. Do I have to be choshish? There's a bug inside a banana? Probably not. I have a head of broccoli. Do I have to be choshish? There may be a bug in broccoli? Maybe yes. So different foods are more subject to bugs than foods are not. So first of all, you have to ascertain, do I have a type of food that even has a reyusa, that even has a concern, that even has a chazoka that there is, that it is infested in the first place? And then I have to figure out, well, what does it mean? What do you mean have a concern? It's a 1 in 5 chance, 1 in 10 chance, 1 in 1,000 chances. What are the numbers that force me to be concerned?
Is the berry, when you said a separate entity, meaning a salami is not a separate entity because it's the same thing?
Yeah, no, a salami is just a slice different? Of meat. Yeah, no, a salami is not a unit. There's no unit of a salami. A bug is a natural unit of things. A ginanosha is a natural unit of things, an entire unit of something. A salami is just a slab of meat that was just packaged up as a salami. So that's not considered to be a berry. A berry, like literally like lashon bria, like the way it grew. So a bug grows as a bug, and a ginanosha grows as a... Salamis don't grow on trees. Salamis take a piece of meat and cut it into a salami.
But the bug disintegrates.
Wait a second. So every time you have a bug shayla in halacha, you have to first figure out, do I have a problem in the first place? Is there even a concern that there's a bug here in the first place? And even if it's loma that there is a bug, maybe the bug is bottle. If I can't see it, so what I don't see is this bottle, but bottle, mashish, whatever the numbers are. So that becomes very problematic. If I want to go down the second route and say, yeah, there are bugs here, it's okay, but I'm eating broccoli soup. I don't see any bugs here. So even though I know there probably are some bugs here, so the answer is, well, that's not so simple, because you have to be concerned with a barrier, and the Gemara says that a bug is a barrier, and a barrier, generally speaking, is not batal, unless the barrier is no longer a barrier. So again, we're going to talk about this later on. Later sugyas also, that in order to be a barrier, so the Rishonim point out, it has to be complete. It has to be completely intact. If the barrier has been broken up and chopped up a little bit, so it's not a barrier anymore. So that could be very helpful. It may not make it the most appetizing, but if you're eating a food that has bugs in it and you can't see the bugs, so if the bugs have been broken up, that's better than if the bugs are intact. I didn't say it's tastier if it's bugs have been broken up, but that is better halachically, because then you don't have a barrier. Sometimes a lot of the issues in terms of bugs are making that determination, making that call. Is it still a barrier? Is it not a barrier? I've sat around and look under the screen and look and try to figure out and see. You're looking at this bug and trying to see, do I see every leg there? Do I see every arm there? Do I see every piece of that bug there? Has the bug already been sufficiently crushed up that it no longer is a barrier? And one could imagine there will be chilukei deis. There'll be different opinions as to, is it really intact? Is it not intact? Is it visibly intact? Not visibly intact? How do you define visibly? With your glasses, with your magnifying glass, how do you make those calls as to what's considered to be visibly intact? This is all the sugya in halacha, the siman shulchan aruch about hilchos toloim. So again, this is a major, major issue, and has always been a major issue in kashrus, has taken on a whole new life in the last couple of decades. It's become a multi-million-dollar business, the bug business, in terms of creating the proper kinds of fruits and vegetables that are clean and free of any halachic problems. Anyway, getting back to that story. So this idea of a barrier existed, Allah, no question about it, that a barrier is in fact not going to be subject to the regular rules of Bittul. And the Rav Avdezin tells us that he thinks that an egg is considered to be a barrier. If you think about it, not such a far-fetched idea. An egg is a whole unit. What's the difference between an egg and a ginanosha? What's the difference between an egg and a bug? It means it was created as a whole unit. A whole entity. The mushroom created as an egg. It's not an artificially, chunk of salami. And therefore, it's subject to the rules of barrier. If it's subject to the rules of barrier, so then we understand why the Gemara shied away by saying Beitza B'Shishim is referring to the Bittul Gufa Beitza, because it just wouldn't be true that we have this cryptic statement of Chazal, Beitza B'Shishim. And the Gemara is draining us, it must be talking about the egg was made into an omelet. It must be talking about it's scrambled eggs. It must be talking about the egg is broken down and we tried to be Mevatel, the Tam of the Beitza. Where's the Tam of the Beitza? The Gemara is having a whole problem. Where's the Tam of the Beitza? So ask the Rav HaBezin, forget the Tam of the Beitza. I'll give you a different scenario. a different case, a bitul gamrei, bitul gufa beitza. Why not? What? Why didn't the Gemara give that answer? The answer is because a beitza must be a beria, and therefore wouldn't be subject to the rules of bitul. So this statement of the Rav Abeizin is a loaded statement. To say that an egg is a beria, that's why the Gemara shied away from his answer, is very, very questionable. And in order to understand this Rav Abeizin, we have to go back to the sugya, not a great surprise, the sugya is in Masechet Beitza, to understand, is that statement true or not? We have to test the statement of of the Rav Abeizin to see, is that statement correct, that a beitza really truly constitutes a beria? So we have a lot of work to do. We have a Gemara to analyze, and then we have conceptually to ask ourselves what does or does not make something into a beria. Before we even get to this Gemara beitza, we should just take a step back and ask ourselves, where did this idea come from? Before we can analyze the details, is a beitza a beria, not a beria? Who made this up? Where did this concept come from of a beria?
If the eggs were full, why wouldn't it just be about the baruch, like the salami? What does shishim have to do with it?
Oh, okay. You're asking on the question of the Rav Abeizin. You're asking, why did he even think that Beitz of Shishim would have applied to eggs? What happened to the Dinner Bittul Barov? Okay, very good. That is an excellent question. That's the second half of the Shia, not of today's Shia, probably more of later in the week Shia. As to where we're going along the line of reasoning with Rav Abeizin, as the Sugya begins to unravel, we're going to see, wait a second, we're going to stop the question in its tracks and say, wait a second, why did you even dream that was a good okimta? Where does shishim come from? What happened to bitul barov? That's the second half of the shir. Okay, good, very good, excellent. So before we can talk about the details, is something a beria or not? So you have to ask yourselves the basic question, where did this din come from? Who made up this halacha? Where did this come from? That you have a beria is not batal. The Torah says, acharav l'hatos. Why is a beria not batal? So the answer seems to be that this is part of a general statement that we find there are many, many things in halacha that are not batel, and many of them, the reason is the same, that they were, we call halacha dvarim chashuvim, things that are very, very important, things that are intrinsically important, so do not lend themselves to the din of bittel. The din of bittel is kishmo kenu. Bittel means that it's insignificant. Bittel means, like bittel chometz, ki afra diara, bittel of adizara. So we've quoted before that Baruch Ber says that what is, you know what bittul Torah means? Bittul Torah means a lack of appreciation of chashivas of Torah. If you really appreciated Torah, you wouldn't be batli, you'd be sitting and learning. So bittul always means that you're treating something lightly, you're treating something insignificant. So bittul by Yisurim has the same idea that I have three pieces of meat, and two of them are kosher, one of them is treif, that one is so insignificant. I have 60 times corresponding to the piece of chaz, the treif is insignificant. But every once in a while, we have a situation where the item that's treif is very, very important. You can't just close your eyes and say, it's nothing, it's meaningless, who cares about it? I care about it, it is important. It's a davar chashuv. So the halacha is that whenever you have a davar chashuv, it doesn't lend itself to the regular rules of bittul. Now, is that a din min haTorah? Is that a din min haDerabbanan? So most probably, that's a chumah min haDerabbanan. Min haTorah, it's batal. Min haTorah, this concept doesn't exist. But min haDerabbanan, Chazal made a takana that anytime the item looks choshev to us, for whatever reason, so then we're going to be very, very weary before we apply the rules of bittul. We don't want to declare something as batal if it still has internal, still has intrinsic chashivas to it. Now becomes a critical question, how do you measure chashivas? What makes something important? So now you have different criteria, different factors that are invoked to determine is something choshev or not. Again, min haTorah, the question's over. Min haRabbanan, we're trying to institute this din haRabbanan, the dvarim chashuvim not batel. So we want to know, how do you measure chashivos? So one of the factors that's used to measure chashivos is a beria. A beria is a davar choshev. What makes it a davar choshev? How do I know that this bug is a davar choshev? How do I know that this gid anosha is a davar choshev? How do I know that this beitz, according to Rav Abeizin, is a davar choshev? How do you know that beria itself is so choshev? So here the Ritva explains in our sugya that a little bit later on, when the Gemara comes up again about beria, the Ritva explains that Chazal, in determining whether we should call this a davar choshev, look to the din deraisa. There is a din deraisa of chashivas of a beria in the following sense. The Mishnah says in the third parak of Maseches Makos that in order for a person to receive makos for eating treif of food, you have to eat a kezayis. That's a given. If I eat a kezayis of chazir, I'm chay makos. Kezayis to the veil of chay makos. But every once in a while, you could eat less than a kezayis and still be chayav malchus. How is that? If you ate an entire barrier. That's the famous Gemara Malchus says, if you eat a bug, you can be chayav six malchuses. Because some bugs fly, some swim, some crawl. Each one is a separate issa. So the Gemara talks about the superbug. If you have a bug that crawls and swims and flies, and that all the above, so you chayav malchus for this time, you chayav malchus for that time, you chayav malchus for this time, you chayav multiple malchuses for one bug. So how can you chay malchus feeding a bug? It's not so big. It's less than a kezayis. So how you chay malchus? The Mishnah says the reason is b'beishu kibriya outside because it's a barrier. What does that mean? The shear of kezayis is a shear of chashivus. There was a halacha b'Moshe Sinai that in order to be chay malchus for achila, you have to eat a significant amount. It's not enough just to take a taste of chazer. You have to eat a nice amount of chazer. What's called a shear chashivus? So there was a halacha b'Moshe Sinai that a kezayis is the quantitative shear. What Chazal are telling us is that quantitative shear of kezayis is not always necessary. Sometimes what's lacking in terms of quantity can be made up in terms of, in a certain sense, quality. Namely, if you're eating something that's qualitatively chashuv, you're eating an entire unit, you're eating an entire bug, so even though it's lacking in terms of the quantity of kezayis, but it's making up for that in its quality. Since it's an entire unit, that makes it chashuv. So that idea that a barrier is a davar chashuv, that is a deraisa concept. But in the world of deraisa, that din was only said vis-a-vis giving malchus. That din that a bug is a davar chashuv doesn't have any nafkamin in terms of hilchos taroivis, because min haTorah even dvar chashuv mabotel. So now the Ritva explains that called the tikkun rabbanon came deraisa tikkun. When Chazal formulated a new din, Chazal made up this new din called dvar chashuv not botel. Which rabbis made up this din, which bezin, we have no idea. Sometime between the days of Moshe Rabbeinu and Rabbi Danasi, some bezin sat down and said, this idea of bitl barol, bitl bashir, it's a nice idea, but it doesn't look right, does it? It's very, very tricky. People are going to get very, very confused. If we're dealing with dvarim chashuvim, it's going to throw people off, and therefore, with the rabbanon, we're going to institute dvarim chashuvim not bottle. So now, some bezin is sitting around Lushka Sagozis 3,000 years ago, and trying to figure out, now that we're formulating this din de rabbanon of dvarim chashuvim not bottle, what's called the dvar chashuv? What criteria are we going to use? So we always look to the dinim deraisa. The Torah has certain guidelines, what's called dvarim chashuvim. Those guidelines are not relevant for our sugya, because dvarim chashuvim are bottom in a Torah, but the guidelines are relevant for the sugyas of kezayis and malchus. So just as the Torah has that equation that a barrier is called a dvar chashuv vis-a-vis halachas X, Y, and Z, so to the Rabbanah, we're going to borrow that idea and plug that into vis-a-vis halachas A, B, and C. And that was the formulation. That was what prompted the Mishnah in Maseches Chulin to say that a barrier, get a nasha, a bug, etc., all these things are not the batel. So that's the background behind this halacha. Now we have to work out the details. So we have to figure out, what is a barrier? What's not a barrier? So we have very, very little to go on. We know a get a nasha is a barrier, that's a gemara. We know a bug is a barrier, that's a Mishnah Maseches Malchus. What about a beitza? We have no idea. What would we have said in our own? I have no idea. So came along the Rav Beis Din and had a diyuk in Ash Sugya from the fact that the Gemara didn't say, we're talking about Bitul Gufa Beitza, Zaman, you see from here, must be a proof that a Beitza must be a barrier. That was the Rav Beis Din. He was medayik, that halacha, as to within the intricacies, what is or is not a barrier from the Shakvatai of Ash Sugya.
So according to the Rav Beis Din, why would the Mishnah say that this barrier is Batul B'Shishim?
Which barrier?
This egg.
No, because that's exactly why the Gemara is not talking about the Gufa Beitz. It's talking about it was chopped up, it was made into an omelet, and now we're talking about the Bitul HaTam.
So he rejects the possibility that we're talking about individual.
Right, that's exactly his point. He said the Gemara didn't mention that, didn't go down that route. From the fact the Gemara didn't go down that route, that's a prior that it wouldn't be bought, though. So we have to now challenge Rabbi Beis Din. If you would ask me, Svara, is an egg a barrier or not? I have absolutely no idea. I don't know how to call something a barrier. I have no idea what criteria Chazal are using to determine whether it's a barrier. But there is a Gemara that does discuss Bittel Legabe Beitzim. So we have to learn through the Sugya and Beitza, now in the Gimel Mebeis, and see what Chazal did or did not say about it, and to test. So this is really the lab to test this theory of the Rav Beis Din. So he came up with this theory to explain Pshat and Gemara. Now we have to prove, is he right or is he not right? We have to go through, hopefully, this Sugya now, Maseches Beitza. So the Sugya is the beginning of Maseches Beitza, a very, very famous Sugya. The Gemara is discussing the details, the intricacies of the Beitza Shenol de Biyantif. So remember way, way back, the Mishnah da Beis Maseches Beitza, Beitza Shenol de Biyantif. The very first time that I ever heard about a Beitza Shenol de Biyantif, I was maybe 7 or 8 years old, And I remember the shtibel, we used to daven Friday night in the shtibel around the corner from my house, and the son of the rabbi at the time, I remember, was learning in Lakewood, and he had come back from Lakewood for a Shabbos, and he was making a siyum on Maseches Beitza. That was like my first introduction to the concept called Maseches Beitza, making a siyum on Maseches Beitza. And I knew enough Hebrew to know that a beitza meant an egg. And I remember his father introduced him, and he said, "You know, my son's been learning Maseches Beitza for the last 2 years. He's making a siyum." And I'll never forget. I asked my father, I said, "What in the world could you talk about an egg for 2 years?" I said to myself, he's talking about whether it's an omelet, whether it's a sunny side up, whether it's an egg salad. I couldn't. What could you learn for 2 years about an egg? And then I got a little bit older. I realized you could learn a lot more. It could take you more than 2 years to learn Maseches Beitza. So in the beginning of Maseches Beitza, when I got a little bit older, I realized that Maseches Beitza is a little bit of a misnomer of a Masechta. It's the only Masechta in Shas that starts off with the name of the first word. The Rishonim didn't even call Maseches Beitza. They called it Maseches Yomtif, which makes a lot more sense because that's what it deals with. But somewhere, I don't know if to check the history of the words of Shas, it's a strange thing that somehow colloquially became known as Maseches Beitza, even though it's not really about Beitza. Only the first sugya is about a Beitza, should only be Yomtif. But somehow became known as Maseches Beitza. There's usually in the Yeshivish world, they don't call it Maseches Beitza. They call it Maseches Beya, because Beitza has a little bit of a not such a Lashon Nekiyah connotation, so they use the Aramaic word Beya. So I brought the Raya several times from the Rishon, but that's not correct. That Rabbeinu Chanano called it Maseches Beitza, Belishum Safek. How do I know? Because in his introduction to Maseches Beitza, Rabbeinu Chanano has a very, very short poem. And the poem starts with, Be'ezras Gedol Ha'etza, Aschil Lefarish Maseches Beitza. So unless Rabbeinu Chanano was a lousy poet, so then he used the word Beitza, not the word Beya. But whatever, the Shivas still use the word Beya. But back to whatever Masechta you want to call it, Beitza, Beya, bottom line is the Gemara says the following. The Gemara is discussing a Beitza, and the Gemara quotes the following Beitza. Meisve, we went to the Beitza. Echad Beitza Shinol de B'Shabbos, V'echad Beitza Shinol de B'Yomtif, Eim et Taltanasa. If you have an egg that was laid on Shabbos, an egg that was laid on Yontif, not only are you not allowed to eat it for a variety of reasons, you're not even allowed to move it because it's muktzah, which again is not such a great surprise that you're not allowed to move it because if you can't eat it and you can't use it, so then it's off limits, so it's considered to be a davashal muktzah. So whatever is not usable on Shabbos and Yontif, it cannot be moved either. You can't use it, even if you want to use this egg to cover something, you can't use it. The lisrucha kari hamita, you want to use the egg as a bedpost, you want to use it to support the bed. It better be a big, better be a strong egg. So you can't do that either. But what you are allowed to do is, if you have the egg and you're afraid someone's going to step on the egg, you can put a dish or something, a bowl on top of the egg to protect the egg. So the bottom line is, the beitza should hold the b'shabbos, all the yontif off limits. But now it starts to become relevant for us. Usveika asura. And even if you have a suffix, whether this egg was laid on yontif or shabbos, that's a problem. Vibnis arva be'elav kulan asuros. And if this egg gets mixed up into 1,000 other eggs, we have a problem as well. So here there are two halachic statements the Gemara just said. Each one potentially impacts on your daya. One is that a suffix beitza is asur. Number two is that bittel doesn't work on this beitza. It's arva be'elav kulan asuros. So we have a lot of work cut out. The Gemara has a lot of work cut out for us to try to explain why are those two statements true. Why is a suffix beitza asur? And why is it that bittel doesn't work? And hopefully, Metz Hashem, in the next year, we get through the intricacies of the answers to those two questions. Then we'll be able to come back to the Rav Beis Din and hopefully get a much, much better understanding how this sugyan beitza is going to directly impact on the sugyan chulin of tzaddik. So the next year will be Wednesday.